Welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 3. Today I'm joined by Eric Taylor, Danny Ning, Lydia Tabbitt, and Kirk Pettis, and I am Matt Winter. Today we're going to be talking about Syria and foreign policy. Eric has a clip that he'd like to share with us to get things going. So, Eric, why don't you take it away?
All right. So this is a clip that, at a high level, kind of does a real good job of defining what's going on in the Middle East and what has gone on. So I'll go ahead and play this clip.
I am me, joined together and governing myself. But what if my boss decided I would be more efficient split up? Now replace me with the Middle East and my bosses with the UK and France. Follow the metaphor, because that's the reason we've got such a mess in the Middle East today. A series of lines literally drawn on a map to divide up the spoils of World War I, which has led to hundreds of thousands of deaths and decades of instability. It all started back in 1916, where the Allies were battling the Ottoman Empire in the Middle East and seizing vast tracts of mostly empty territory in what we now know as Iraq, Syria, Israel, bits and pieces of the Gulf States, North Africa, and Lebanon. Except back then, none of that existed. What did exist was a whole load of loose provinces based around city-states, tribes, and concentrations of different ethnic groups, ruled from Istanbul in relative peace for hundreds of years. Not ideal, but it was peaceful. But this system didn't work for new bosses, Britain and France, because many of these provinces were very poor, and now that they were being ruled from a long way away, and in many cases would rather be independent than European, they threatened to cause trouble for the Allies. So, what to do? Well, for the security of the region, for ease of governance, and fortunately, in a way that just so happened to give both parties easy access to oil fields, the lines were redrawn by two ambitious young diplomats, Britain's Sir Mark Sykes and France's François-Georges Picot. But how did they split it up? Did they respect traditional cultural and ethnic divides? Well, no, that would be far too complicated and time-consuming. Instead, when asked by the British government where he wanted the line to be drawn, Sykes simply pointed at the map and said, "I should like to draw a line from the E in Acre to the last K in Kirkuk." That is, France got bits of Turkey, Syria, and Lebanon, the UK got Iraq, Jordan, and most of Palestine. Screw the Sunnis, the Shias, the Alawites, the Kurds, the Jews, the Christians, the Druze, and everyone else. Your nationality was now brought to you by the letters E and K on a map. Spiffy. In fact, many historians now believe that such an utter steaming heap of a national boundary was in fact done deliberately to keep the tribes separated and to stop anyone from becoming too powerful and demanding any of that pesky independence stuff. Of course, the locals weren't necessarily pleased, leading to a few revolts, such as in Iraq in 1920, in which Winston Churchill advocated gassing the Kurds. Sound familiar? But generally, for the next 30 years, the system did work. Then came the 1940s. Britain and France basically ran out of money and had to give all of that lovely luxury back. And how did we do? Well, those lines of sand that we created arbitrarily, on a whim, and we stuck with them. Whilst Israel was a slightly different issue, carved out of former Palestine by UN resolution, the borders of the new republics of Syria, Jordan, and Iraq remained largely the same. Except now, rather than being given leaders and opposition being crushed, they had to pick their own leaders from one of the increasingly divided tribal, religious, or ethnic groups in their now largely impoverished nations. And that caused military coups, and that caused dictatorships and people calling themselves colonel to get into power and cement their own religious or tribal group into a position of power at the cost of all others. And there we have a mess. We have a series of states made up of people who don't like each other, along borders that don't really mean anything, building up their armies against their own people, and funding militias to try and topple their neighbours. Now, there's plenty of other things that have caused the Middle Eastern situation. Of course, the ambitions of groups on the ground, repeated wars with Israel, economic strife, and the Cold War tactics of both NATO and the USSR, which saw both sides flooded with weapons. Fantastic. What a great idea. But this is at least one reason why we end up with the situation before the Arab Spring and everything that followed. Because of one line drawn on a map. Good work, history.
There we have it.
It's a good description of what's been going on over there, that's for sure.
So the whole world was fucked up because of one line. Great. I love it.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to put any actual real effort into trying to draw boundaries, would you? So we've got post-World War One, where everybody gets drawn into arbitrary boundaries, and now you've got these leaders who are stood up by France and the UK, who really have no right to be leading half of the people that are under them, and they're, as a result, you end up with turmoil.
So my World War One history is a little lacking, because you never hear about anything going on in the Middle East during that war. It's mostly focused during Europe, you know, Germany and the neighboring countries there. Oh, they went through, was it Belgium or to get to France? So anyways, so why was even the spoils of wars or the war brought, you know, the colonization of that area?
Well, it was mostly the Middle East at that time, and it was covered a little bit in that clip, was mostly under Ottoman Empire control. And they kept a real loose structure as far as managing individual tribes. It was just, you know, through most of the Middle East, most of the Arabian Peninsula, with the exception of Saudi Arabia, they're autonomous tribes. So they weren't really countries or states. There were tribes that were under the control of the Ottoman Empire under Istanbul, but so that's Turkey, essentially. But Turkey was involved in World War One. They were not on the winning side of the war and eventually lost power shortly after the war. And that's where you had kind of a power grab by France and Great Britain, which is kind of outlined in that clip. So that was kind of the start of it. And of course, after World War II, you had the Zionist movement that was able to really carve out Israel, you know, because they wanted it, essentially. They wanted their own chosen land. But the general boundaries of the countries within the Middle East were defined after World War One, when there was kind of there's somewhat of a power vacuum because the Ottoman Empire ended. So in each area, it's kind of a complicated matter to go over one by one, but in each area there were really arbitrary lines drawn. You can look at Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Syria, where there were nation state lines drawn, but they're actually tribal areas or tribes that went over those lines, and they were told to get on their side, like the Turks, for example. You're in Iraq, you need to get on, or the Kurds, excuse me, you need to get on the Turkish side. And they said, no, this is our land. And, you know, there were conflicts, and the same thing with Palestine. So it's, you know, a lot of the warring is a direct result of artificial country lines being drawn over existing tribes.
You know, there's nothing better than talking about that too, in my opinion. When you even more specifically after World War II, when you're talking about Israel being set up the way it is, like, you take the one place that is the most hotly contested warred over area in of all time, period, Bethlehem, you know, every religion sees their roots there, and you give it to one specific religion, and you anticipate this to not cause problems. I mean, what were they thinking? This is the least intelligent move I've ever heard of, ever.
Well, you gotta divide the people. I think that was the key aspect of the whole thing, because that's when they need. So the way I look at it is they saw the value of the Middle East for the resources of oil, and to get in there, you can't. It's much easier to deal with a state and to set up a proxy. We're back with those technical difficulties. So essentially we're facing, we're left to deal with a Middle East that's divided up into these borderlines that I personally believe were set up to enact proxy governments that other governments could actually deal with, and the way of controlling the people. And what better way to control the people but than having faction sides that you develop to inner fighting within the country, and you can easily overlook the true controlling powers over the area. And it's a way to manipulate the power and throw off dissension, I guess, in a way. You can, you have the two sides that can rise and create disturbances if you are capable of utilizing some of the leaders and whatnot. So to me, it's just obvious why it was set up that way. That's how the colonizations of the powers were at the time. European powers and America wasn't quite there yet, but we're obviously trying, we're trying to get more and more involved into that imperialization in the world. So I guess I forgot where I was leading with the whole interjection.
You're touching on Israel specifically.
I wasn't touching with, I don't think, or well, what I was saying is how, you know, well, I brought up at the beginning, why did, you know, the Middle East get divided up after World War One anyways, but because of the Ottoman Empire. But, and what I was leading to is that it needed to be divided up to, for the access to the resources, and the best way is these European powers knew best to control areas, so I can see how it was set up that way, and it's just surprising how it's glossed over by the public. And I would bet a lot of people listening to that beginning clip really had no idea that most of these countries were just imaginary lines drawn up and divided tribes and whatnot. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't, a lot of that was new, the clip was, a lot of that was new information to me as well. So, I think kind of the general population's, knowledge on this is limited, if not non-existent.
Yeah. And I think it's purposely hidden from it there. It's not reported in the media very often. So it's kind of just glossed over and kind of assume knowledge if it's ever talked about, but it's, they gloss over it really quickly, go through it, and mm-hmm. don't highlight it as much. Keep it very low perception in the public.
Yep. So are we kind of focusing today then on historical or kind of current situation or future? I was kind of unclear as to what the direction of the conversation was going to be.
So we're talking about Syria and foreign policy.
Yeah, I know. But are we discussing kind of, I don't know.
I think to get to the point where you can have a conversation about today, what's happening in Syria, you have to have a fundamental understanding of how getting Syria. So that's why we talked about the history.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry, my absorption of that information was not ideal because I was
on the move.
Yes. So okay. if you need to fill me in as we're going, I apologize.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So basically there's this, after World War One, they started drawing arbitrary lines, and now there's a bunch of nation states that don't actually represent people or nations. And there's a lot of fighting because of it. I think There's been a few things that have happened in recent times in Syria that I just absolutely cannot believe that we're doing the things we are. I honestly think that we've got a complete failure of honest reporting coming from Syria as to what's actually happening. Because when you start talking about the embassy over there and what happened with was it Hillary who said don't defend the place, and it was full of CIA agents?
Are you talking about Benghazi?
That was in Libya. That was Benghazi.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Nope. That's okay.
Well, it's very related in a way. I mean, that's kind of the speculation. That's where they were funneling the weapons into Syria through the rebels. But anyways.
Okay. Yeah, sorry, were you going to say something?
No, well, essentially what my comment was going to be, which is still relevant, I guess, even though it's the wrong country that I was talking about, is we've got a situation where we've got a national leadership who doesn't actually work for the better interest of our country or towards moving the goals that should be, you know, a positive goal for us at the same time as they're standing up and saying they are. You've got a situation where we've got tons of sensitive people, and we'll call them people for the sake. They're CIA agents who are inside a building who are getting attacked, and they say, don't help them. I can't understand that. And the philosophy of...
Because it's an operation.
Well, from a liberty-focused side, we shouldn't be there in the first place. We're in a nation-building... Right, so we shouldn't be there, and we've got a situation where we are there, and how much more clear could you make it? I mean, how much clearer could you make the fact that we're in a bad, we're doing the wrong thing there, than by not defending your interests over there?
Well, the only reason we're there is economic interests, and to damn be liberties of those people, and then they're even abusing our liberties at the home front, just for what they're facing over there. So it's a double whammy where supposedly we are all for freedom in the world, yet we're very oppressive in these areas that are purposely formed with these invisible lines to keep people in to keep them down in a way. So it's
to keep them under influence that's not in their best interest, because they can't do anything about it. They can't organize.
Nor is it really
in
our best interest either. And that's
it's in the best interest of the people who are in power. That's essentially what it is. It's not about the people at this point. It's about who's in power.
Well, I don't think it's even people in power. It's just it's how our system's been set up. We need the oil. We would prefer to get it from over there than to get it ourselves, and it's agreements throughout all the other countries. I mean,
I'm inclined to disagree with that slightly, though.
It's very complicated foreign policy, but
I'm inclined to slightly disagree with that, though, because we get the vast majority of our oil from Canada and South America. It's 10% comes from the Middle East. So this much turmoil and this much strife is being driven off of 10% of the consumption that we have. I mean, OPEC actually isn't even that.
We still prop up the oil in the Middle East. We deal with Saudi Arabia especially. We set them up, made them kings over in that area to kind of be an external government force in the area, especially around Mecca, the holiest for the Muslims area, just like Israel took over the Holy Land there as well. But it's my point is...
We're watching the propping up inside an area for a resource that's not necessary to be fighting over at this point. There's no reason to continue to fight over it because we've got resources available.
No, there is, because it's what props up the dollar. The dollar is what the oil is traded in. And so we secure the oil and make sure it pumps throughout the entire world, not just America, that it's in the interest of... that we can get it from Canada at a reasonable price, because if Canada was the only area too, then it would be jacked up. I mean,
we've got
foreign policy interweb throughout all the Western civilizations,
right,
and now
right.
China and else. And well, it's China and Russia kind of have their own trying to force the oil to the east, and we have, or you know, so it's a battle that way too. I mean, that's where they get their oil. So
We've also got our own resources here in the United States that we could be tapping and not having to deal with any of this at this point.
Well, that's my point, is by how it's set up, we need to protect the Middle East and be involved. But it doesn't need to be that way. If we really were focused on liberty and a free market and And if we were, we'd have to focus on ourselves first and expel it from that way, you know, just through. We would, our economy would take off so much that it would throw a wrench in the whole other world system, and all the other tyrannical governments that are set up would be scrambling to make up excuses why America is so bad for our growth in our economies and our true freedoms and liberties, that we'd be the envy of the world. So it goes back to liberty, where we've propped up this faulty government of our own, and where it's shooting ourselves in the foot from both sides, like we've been talking about.
One of the other things, at least this is what I've seen, as far as oil in the Middle East, if that's what you're kind of talking about, is this is more than the United States. The oil and gas is used, you know, primarily exported to Europe and Asia, and there are corporate interests in extracting and refining and transporting the oil. So there are real corporate profits at play. Just because it's not going to the United States doesn't mean that U.S. companies don't have direct interests in extracting, refining, and shipping, and ultimately selling petroleum products out of the Middle East. There are a lot of UK companies, a lot of French, U.S. and Chinese companies that are competing for resources, which to a certain level really has to contribute to proxy wars that are happening, you know, in the area. And you certainly could. In talking about Syria, you certainly could question what the interests are behind the rebel army, behind the Syrian government, where those funds come from, and what they're ultimately looking to accomplish.
Can I insert a comment here?
Yeah.
Okay, so I wish I would have known this was the topic of discussion before this morning, because I actually have a friend in my economics class that's from Syria, and I had a fairly long discussion with him like a week ago on sort of the current situation in Syria, just because I was really interested to get kind of a firsthand account as to what's going on there. And now I'm kind of forgetting where I'm going with this. I just lost my train of thought. I was really interested in kind of what he had to say in terms of a comment. Probably the thing that he said that really stood out to me was he said something about, you know, if all outside influences were cut off from the country, if the country was exclusive, kind of isolated on its own, he said the civil war would probably be over within a matter of months, if not 1 month or something, which I thought that was very interesting, that this is definitely being funded externally, or is being prolonged, I guess, externally. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I think that's dead on. And actually, I have a clip that kind of goes over that. It's a clip that I was talking about before the show. It's a little bit longer. But on the, you know, specifically on the rebel side, there's a high likelihood that a lot of the funds are and support is coming through Saudi Arabia. And there certainly is U.S. involvement there.
Well, it sounded like actually that wasn't the impression that I was given at talking to this person. Was he was at least under the impression that a lot of the rebels are, I mean, there's definitely he said, I think, something about, and this was, I'm trying to remember their conversation, this was like 2 weeks ago, but he said something, I think, about how there's an increasing number of foreign fighters joining the rebels, but I think
Al-Qaeda is one.
I've heard that myself. I don't know. Sorry, Eric, I don't know where I was going with that. If you want to move on to what the clip you were going to play. But I don't think it's exclusively one side. I think from what I understood, there's outside influences on both sides.
Pretty obvious America has been wanting to go to war with Syria. Barack Obama made it perfectly clear. Has it been 2 years now, or has it only been a year? Where
it's like 6 months.
Supposedly.
Oh, yeah, I guess a year.
Asked the rebels. Now it's when America, Obama was demanding us to go to war with Syria. And even Congress was backing it, and the people of America just rose up and stopped it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been one of the, it was pretty big, and it was, I mean, I think John McCain was all for it, Obama was for it, both parties wanted it. It dissolved because of the lack of proof. For one, our State Department was saying it was from the government itself gassing their own people, when it was very inconclusive. And then just a month ago, a commission came back that our own government produced as saying it wasn't the rebels it was from the rebels, not from the government. We almost went to war over this, which was specifically what Obama and everyone said that Bush did to get us in a war with Iraq. And the exact same lies, in a way, were being spun for Syria, and the people and Americans just came up and stopped it.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry.
And it was definitely the right move, and it was proven right over time. And you don't even hear in the media that report that blamed the rebels launching it on themselves was covered up. I mean, it was sparsely reported at best.
And I think the big issue there, right, was urgency to engage in some sort of military action without any sort of justification or legitimate hard evidence. And I think that was where you got a lot of people that were skeptical. And I think not exactly related to the Syria thing, but I think kind of just in a more political sense, I thought that the Syria situation kind of at the end of the summer was a great example of how people from all different kind of coalitions and viewpoints and stuff really kind of found a common interest and I don't know, it's kind of the people standing up to government. I think that was one of the
we're sick of
best
this
examples
war.
Of that. In recent times, I think. I mean, you saw people from both political parties from really all over the country going on the news saying, yeah, I'm getting phone calls overwhelmingly like 100-1 or 99-1 in opposition for this. So that's kind of a side tangent there, but I think that was
I remember that, but
I forgot what I was gonna say, so yeah, never mind.
Like, even like, honestly, to this day, like, I don't even know what prompted this war
in Syria. Yeah. Oh, well, that's very, oh, sorry.
Oh, no, feel free to share. I don't know. I just look into like Google News, and then I just see, you know,
it's a dictatorship. I mean, Assad is a dictator. I mean, that's sort of, I mean, it's a legitimate cause that they're fighting. The question is whether the U.S. should have any sort of involvement in it, right? I mean, that's sort of my perspective. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Did we help put in Assad?
And that's where you guys are going to have to fill me in.
He was elected, and you know, he's a hardline dictator, but one thing that he's done well, and Lydia, it'd be interesting if you get this feedback from your classmate, but one thing that he's done well is keep uphold a really secular culture. So it's a religiously tolerant culture.
Yeah, and that's interesting that you say that, because that was another thing. I'm kind of remembering bits and pieces of this conversation as we're talking about it. But that was the other thing that I thought was – the second thing that I thought was really interesting was that this guy I was talking to, he was saying, you know, a lot of these rebel fighters, they're They are from rural areas and they're not very well educated. So they, his perspective was, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, I hope I'm not misrepresenting what he was trying to say, but his perspective was, you know, they're fighting a legitimate cause. I mean, it's a dictatorship. There's a legitimate fight to be fought, but the people fighting it, he said something about it's very well organized at the top. He said, you know, these people, you'll see people from the rebel groups that are dressed really well and are very wealthy. But then some of these rebel fighters, he said the majority of the rebel fighters he talked to, especially I think in the more rural area, he said, are very uneducated. I think touching on what Eric was saying, it's more of a religious type of influence is what I got out of. I don't know. So, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. Went off on a tangent there a little bit, but that was sort of my, my take on what he had to say. It was a really interesting conversation. I wish I would have, invited him to join our conversation today, but I didn't know.
Well, so. In my opinion, all these people have been probed and pricked and they're being encouraged to fight this civil war, this religious war. It's been at bay for such a long time, but we've been sending in agents and whatnot, propping up rebels, giving them weapons, giving them arms. We want this fight to happen for some reason. And what are we getting out of it? It doesn't make sense.
Well, I can tell you the way in which they're framing the conversation, or the way they're promoting, at least the U.S. would be forming the argument, and that would be that, you know, Assad is a dictator, and he's using chemical weapons. He's using allowed tactics. Yeah,
Well, it's pretty much exactly what
that's the justification.
Saddam, the exact same things they're saying about Saddam Hussein.
What was that?
They're saying the exact same things. They said the exact same thing about Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. Yep.
And I see is our own state, America, is doing state-sponsored terrorism in another foreign country and encouraging this civil war. Mm-hmm. And
whether it's justified or not. We're
even propping up Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups over there, which while we're fighting Al-Qaeda in a neighboring state. Mm-hmm. Which is obviously just an invisible line. When it's a whole tribal function and the war on terrorism, it just boggles my mind how all this new talk about being able to kill drone Americans or whatnot, how did we get in this fight again? World Trade Towers were bombed. Americans lost their lives. We're going around the world doing the exact same thing. We're causing economic disturbances. We're doing political upheavals and setting up our own dictators and proxy governments, and all for economic interests of global corporations that turn around and fund the campaigns, keep this two-party system going. Mm-hmm. And while the whole time NSA is spying on Americans, any dissent,
I think that's
brought back, and our liberties are being eviscerated at an alarming rate, and very few people need to be in control over all this information and become very, very powerful and dictate of what's going on today. And
it's and I think that to me is the most terrifying thing. That to me is the most terrifying thing is the deterioration of the deterioration of the respect to for rule of law, and I was going to say something else. Deterioration for respect for rule of law, or just kind of our group would agree for the United States Constitution, or just for, you know, basic principles that the United States was founded on. I would agree with you there, Kirk.
Well, it's so ironic that the government can deem necessary to kill an American who is apparently doing thought crimes and hasn't even been committing crimes yet and apparently is going to do harm to America or Americans or whatnot. So we're going to go kill an American without due process. That's not ironic to anyone in the mainstream media or anything. And
are you talking
or even government itself? It's
Kirk.
It's
Kirk.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Go ahead, Eric.
Are you talking about Yemen? Is that what you're talking about? Or what are you?
No, I'm just talking about in general our drone kill list now.
Yeah, that's just wondering.
That was it. Yeah, that was in Yemen, I believe. Yeah. I know what Eric's referring to. Yep.
What was that clip, Eric, that you were going to play? Should we play that one now? Or?
Let's play it. So this really covers an interesting angle over wars in the Middle East and the Afghanistan area. It's really pipeline development to transport natural gas and no agenda. Kirk will appreciate this. This is Adam Curry mostly is breaking this down. So,
I have not heard this, I'm very interested.
So, at any point, just let me know. I'll turn up the volume, turn it down, or pause it, and we can discuss at any point in the clip. It's longer, so if we want to shut it down, it's almost 15 minutes. So, if we want to shut it down, just let me know. All right, I'll go ahead and start it here. Maybe.
So, this, of course, is all intended to do a couple of things, but this is all about stopping and blocking Russia from using Syria as an extension of their Blue Stream pipeline, the Blue Stream 2.
Well, the question is, because I think you can interpret this in a couple of different ways, but is it who is blowing up the Homs pipeline? Is it Assad's people or other people?
No, it's CIA operatives, which is we'd call them Al-Qaeda. They are coming in. They are blowing it up. See, we want the airstrikes. We want to go and blow all that stuff up because Russia, they tried to put together, the pipeline that would all go through Turkey. And Turkey is not a good player. Turkey is arrogant.
It's good
that way. And no one really wants to be reliant upon Turkey. And now that we have, because if you look at where Syria is, I mean, Syria is right there on the same level as Cyprus. Cyprus has that Leviathan oil field. So we don't want Russia sending the gas out through Syria, but we certainly don't want them to import that in. And this is where the big aha moment came, because Russia
pause it real quick.
The IPI, and this is the Iran-Pakistan-India pipeline, also known as the Peace Pipeline. How funny is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you heard of this thing?
No, not in any degree. I'm going to hear about it now.
Yes. So the IPI. This really started many, many years ago, and it was completely backed by the Russians. The gas coming from, here it comes, Turkmenistan. Now, you have to know that Turkmenistan is where they have, the outside of Leviathan, they have the mother load of natural gas. And Iran wanted to, and if you look, you got to look at the map to understand all this stuff. Iran wanted to pipeline this through Pakistan into India. You have India and Pakistan kind of neighbors, and this is why Pakistan is very important. Now, the United States, and this includes Bill Clinton, Bush, Hillary, Lucifer Clinton, they backed the TAPI pipeline. This is the Turkmenistan-Afghanistan-Pakistan-India pipeline, also known as the 21st Century Silk Road. Does this ring a bell at all, John?
It's interesting.
Let's listen to Ambassador Susan Rice. This is from episode 344 of the No Agenda Show.
Pakistan moves towards the 2014 transition We know that government alone cannot grow Afghanistan's economy. So we must all continue to work to create an environment that attracts private sector investment. Last week, Foreign Minister Rasool, German Foreign Minister Westerwelle, and Secretary of State Clinton met with 27 of Afghanistan's neighbors and partners to advance their shared vision of a new Silk Road.
Oh, really? The new Silk Road. This new Silk Road, I'm going to give you some more interesting names, is planned to be built along the Herat-Kandahar Highway across western and southern Afghanistan. And this has to cross through a very important region in Pakistan known as, and you're going to see this in the news, put it in the red book right now, Balochistan. I love these names. Balochistan, B-A-L-O-C-H-I-S-T-A-N. Balochistan. And it's really important that Balochistan is under control. So you watch, there'll be some kind of new terror group in Balochistan, and who's going to go in there? And this is in Pakistan, by the way, Balochistan. We're going to have troops in there because, you know, they're killing the people of Balochistan. This is the pipeline, the TAPI. This is the pipeline that we went, the Unocal pipeline, I should.
Yeah, the one that goes way back before anything happened.
This is why it all happened.
9/11,
this is why 9/11 happened, or at least 9/11 was used as the catalyst to get this going. Now, here's where there's a little kink in the cable. Gwadar. You got to get a map. People who are listening to this, you have to look this up. Gwadar is very key. This is a port that was built by China, the Chiners. And
how do you spell that?
G-W-A-D-A-R.
Okay.
So this is a key point in the planning of the IPI, the peace pipeline, versus the TAPI. So Gwadar cannot fall into the wrong hands.
Gwadar is where the pipeline goes, that Iranian pipeline goes right through there.
Exactly, exactly. So who runs all the big gas companies in Turkmenistan? This blew me away. I didn't understand this. But
well, you'd think Gazprom, but apparently not.
No. It is run by, I'm just looking here in my show notes, by an outfit called... where is it here? It's run by Yusuf A. Maimon. And it is the Maghreb group of companies. Yusuf A. Maimon is a U.S.-educated Israeli. And he owns 30% of all the Egyptian gas, which is now, of course, not coming into Israel because all the pipelines were blown up. And he has no part in the Leviathan oil field.
How do you spell that?
What?
Maghreb.
M-A-G-R-E-V.
Huh.
I think it is. Let me just check.
The Book of Knowledge doesn't care for that.
Maybe I'm saying it wrong. Hold on a second. I have the guy here.
What's the guy's name?
Maimon, M-A-I-M-A-N.
M-A-I-M-A-N.
So now Iraq, Iran, and Syria, just a couple months ago, signed a $10 billion gas deal, which involves the construction of a 5,000-kilometer pipeline to transfer Iran's gas from the South Pars gas field to Europe via Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and the Mediterranean. So we're seeing the real war is about whose gas is going to who, with the two big kahunas being India on one hand and Europe on the other hand. And this is what this is all about.
Well, I don't even think it's about the gas. It's about the transmission.
Yeah, the pipelines. Yeah. It's about the transmission because it's very good. We know that it's
there's
it's
no
too
money
cheap
in the gas at right all.
But the price goes up whether if you A, have less gas, which we don't, so we have too much gas, at least to make money off of it. So then it comes down to the transport. You don't want to put this thing on ships. It doesn't work that way. You've got to have pipelines. So this is why Pakistan is our buddy. This is why, because of the TAPI, and this is why thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people have died is over this idiotic business, which if we were all just kind of nice, would be, we could figure it all out. We could do business with each other. Instead, we have to all go and fight and kill each other. So keep your eye on the TAPI and the warring factions in Israel itself about who's going to transport what gas where. And this is why the Russians, they really want Syria. They really want it because they can try and claim some of that Leviathan, but they can also just bypass. It's much shorter to go. It's shorter to go from Syria to Cyprus. And there's a whole bunch of different pipelines in the planning. But Balochistan is where you're going to see the next Al-Shabaab, Al-Qaeda terrorist group. So we can go in there and we can keep the pipeline safe. And this is all in the past few months, John, where India has said, oh, okay, we're not going to be a part of the peace pipeline. All right, we'll just become a part of the TAPI, the Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India pipeline. Who does that cut out? It cuts out Iran. It's perfect. And a lot of this, of course, leads right back to Switzerland, right back to our buddy Mark Rich. Crazy enough. So I was blown away when you really look at the map, and I've made a couple more maps. It's all in the show notes, 386.nashownotes.com. And you'll see I've set up a pipelines.curry.com. For some reason, that Bush drones didn't work. But if you go to oil.pipelines.curry.com, there you can already see all of the oil pipelines. I'm still working on the gas pipelines. But it's unbelievable that where all these American international coalition, but mainly American soldiers have died, is along the new Silk Road. That's where it is. It's all about the pipeline. And in order for the CIA to protect the pipeline with their drones, we take the poppies, sell the drugs, take that money, and finance the CIA. It's a perfect scam.
Well, you got me.
I didn't know about this TAPI.
I guess any flaws in this logic.
No. Well, the flaw is, let me think. People like Lucifer Hillary Clinton don't give a crap about people, and they'll kill anyone in the process. And the crazy thing is, when you can get the military in, who's the number one user of petroleum-based products in the United States? The military! It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, hey, we got to go protect that, and we send our number one customer in. It's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. And all we have to do to fleece the American public is come up with some kind of bullcrap terror scheme, and we just keep merging them in. So now Taliban is Al-Qaeda. Al-Shabaab is now Al-Qaeda. Who else is going to be Al-Qaeda? It's all Al-Qaeda. They're all terrorists. Everyone is a terrorist. And that warrants the use of force to go and play our games. And Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and George Bush Sr. and Jr., they're running a lot of it.
Did you see the latest reports about sexual assaults in Syria by the soldiers? Did you get that one?
Do you have a clip?
No, I got to get a clip. I was on the radio and I was driving around in my car, but it was the exact same
script.
They're so insulting, they don't even bother to change the playbook.
They don't even try.
It worked before. Why won't it work again? I can just see the meeting. No, it worked before. Nobody said anything about it.
It's the Merhav group of companies, Merhav. Merhav. Merhav Group. Mike Echo Romeo.
Merhav Group.
Hotel Alpha Victor. Merhav. Don't look at their website because that's not going to help you anything. And so this is an Israeli guy, U.S. educated, Cornell, who owns all of Turkmenistan's processing and pipe pumpage. Oh, here we go. U.S. Congressman denies CIA behind Balochis. Oh, there's a resolution. Here we go. Oh, just hot off the wire. I hadn't even said it, and already it's coming through. Well, check this out. The purpose, we have a resolution by House Foreign Affairs Committee member Dana Rohrabacher from California, surprise, who launched a congressional resolution calling for self-determination for Balochistan. Uh-huh. The purpose of the resolution is to create much-needed dialogue about Pakistan and Balochistan, and that's what it's done. So that's very nice. Oh, boy. Fantastic. Balochistan. And don't forget Tajikistan. Now, it's hard for us to think about all these names because it's like, whatever. But if you look at the map and you see where all this stuff is placed, it makes so much sense. All of a sudden, the world just... And so everything you see, particularly if Hillary Clinton's involved, you know that it's benefiting some oil or gas company somewhere. And we're and our kids, our boys and girls, are being sent off to the sand to die for this.
And that's it. That's a clip.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It's totally unsurprising, but it's absolutely remarkable at the same time.
And this clip was from 2 years ago?
A couple years ago, yeah. February 28th, 2012.
Yeah, and when No Agenda talks, Eric, you'd probably know about this, but they talk about the pipelines all over that. It's not reported in the media today in America at all, but the pipelines being extended to China, up through Russia, all over these new oil pipelines, natural gas pipelines, is kind of the driving force of a lot of the military action going on everywhere. And it's kind of the State Department of Russia and America still butting heads, and
China
and whatnot. So it's all behind the scenes played out while this whole other facade of the war on terror and everything is pulling the wool over our eyes of what's really going on. But excuses.
Yeah, there are multiple layers, to Syria or any of the conflicts. And earlier I was mentioning the fact, and I just want to clarify, that Syria, Assad had been known for being quite fair to the various religions within the country. Is actually one of the most secular, non-violent, non-discriminatory countries in the Middle East. He is viewed as a dictator, but he was elected, and he did a fairly good job of treating Christians, Jews, Muslims, and making sure that they all had equal rights, weren't discriminated against. And it certainly appears that there were motivations behind, you know, the civil war that were outside of the country.
I am going to have to go. I apologize. I've got homework and things, and I only have the room till 4:30. So I'm going to be signing off, but I will listen in on kind of the final bits of this. Oops, and there goes the bell that the library is closing in a half hour. So I will listen to the rest of this later. But, what's the plan for the next meeting? Next Sunday? I'm assuming I'll just hear from you.
Why don't we just take care of that offline?
Yeah, offline. Yeah, that's fine.
We'll let you know.
Sorry about that. I'll talk to you all later.
Okay,
see you later.
Okay, bye.
Well, where do we see Syria going in the next year or two, or is this all just going to fizzle out? Do you think it's going to escalate? Do you think we're going to actually be sending in military troops? What do you guys have any thought processes on that?
I don't know. I haven't really heard any news on Syria lately, so I'm not sure. Maybe I'm just focusing on other news, but no, I haven't heard much. I don't know.
Well, just
seems like fluff for me.
Well, that's why I was surprised in that clip we just played from No Agenda. They were talking about the home pipeline being blown up, and that was just, didn't that just happen again last week? Does anyone know?
I don't know. It was an interesting, there was an interesting overlay. So this clip had a bunch of maps and that sort of thing. And at one point there was a map. Actually, there were two maps of drone strikes within Afghanistan and then also Saudi Arabia, Syria in the Middle East. And I don't know if this is completely factual or not, but they plotted drone strikes in both locations, and they were only along the pipeline. So in areas that ran through Afghanistan, the drone strikes were specifically only in or hit areas that were directly – that the pipeline directly ran over. So if that home attack took place, that would just kind of follow – you know, what's been, would have been going on before this clip was produced.
Well, I know they're, like today, essentially, they were in the peace talks, like essentially didn't do jack. They came back and said, both sides really have done very little to, and the bloodshed, and the peace talks ended today, so essentially they didn't accomplish anything.
Did you read that article in the Star Trib today?
No. This is I read something from CNN.
There was an article in the Star Trib today that talked about the trade or the peace talks fizzled out and both sides left, and I don't know, it just seems like a sham to me, but what was it called? Transitional, the TGB was the new meme in the article. They kept stating that, oh, there's Syria's government's not talking about how the TGB, which is a transitional government body. So it's pretty much saying that Syria's government, they need to agree on dissolving the, you know, Syrian's government. So this would be the way the peace talks, I guess, to overthrow the government. I don't see how that's really peace talks. That's just accepting defeat and having the Syrian government walk away. No, so
seems like it's more
self-defeating process, in my opinion.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I think there's a decent amount of Russian and Chinese support behind the Syrian government because of, again, just kind of going over the pipeline idea. There are vested interests in getting oil and gas out through Syria rather than out through Turkey. I don't know. To me, the UN peace talks are more cover than anything. I'm looking at a New York Times article where John Kerry issued a statement today that blamed the Syrian government for the deadlock in peace talks. But sort of the United States remained committed to the Geneva process, and you know, I don't know.
Well, that's what's so funny. We're backing the rebels, and then we're sitting there blaming the government for stepping in the way. And to me, it's such a joke and in your face, and it's the magic of our PR department for America here that the State Department does, and it makes no sense for us to sit there and fund the opposition and then go and say, see, you know, you're defending yourself, you're doing this, claiming they're doing chemical attacks when they're not, when it was the rebels that were given chemical attacks, it blew up on them accidentally. And it was such a botched operation. Our government sat there and had to quickly accuse the government of launching chemical attacks against them when the rebels were going to use those chemicals against whoever didn't go along with them to take over more towns or to even use it against the Syrian government.
Well, that's a very good point, and I think one of the things that's kind of often overlooked when we're talking about Syria is that there's been over 140,000 people killed in this conflict. We're not talking about an insignificant amount. Those numbers are
very inconclusive.
Right, but that's what they're actually willing to admit to is 140,000.
Well, I think they're trying to stretch the numbers, is what I'm saying. But
oh, you think so? Well, at any rate, there's been tens of thousands of people killed. Yes, over this
and
conflict.
The rebels are there. There have been reports of these rebels coming in, going to schools, throwing kids off the rooftops, going into churches, throwing members of the church off the rooftops. They're just
I had not heard that.
It's the rebels that are causing most of the havoc throughout the country. Huh. And they're not even Syrian. They're outside-funded rebels that are infiltrated in. Illegal aliens, in to put in American terms. What do you think we would do? And listen to what, Eric, you were talking about, these drone strikes around these. Say that was happened to America. That America wasn't the powerhouse we were. We were just under some other superpower. And they put pipelines through our country, and we didn't like the superpower over us, and we saw their economic gain, and you tried to blow up the pipeline, and you're being killed by robotics. I mean, it's a daunting proposition. It's all what we see in the movies, in our futuristic movies, but it's happening in current time in these third world nations all around the world. America's causing havoc that we cannot even comprehend. And it's just sad that there's no public outrage.
Well, I think there is. It's we are the people who are outraged by it. There's just not national coverage of that type of outrage. I think
it would be very easy to propagate this outrage, and yet our media is working with the government to cover up and to not gloss over it and not propagate this outrage. 100 years ago, this would be rampant in our media, and there would be public outrage. There'd be actually true politicians debating this on the floor of Congress instead of national debt being raised or whatever little BS topic that they'll throw in our face for us.
Right. But I think you're correct. I absolutely agree with you on that. I think there's a disingenuous, however self-motivated, to control the media as far as this kind of stuff goes. So what I think is happening is you've got the owners of the national media organizations, Rupert Murdoch, having his own financial interest in not actually being reporting news. It's about selling advertising and supporting whatever other interests he actually has. So we're not actually seeing free reporting. It's controlled by the organizations that set it up, so it's a natural.
I've said this to you guys before, I'll say it again. I strongly recommend watching on YouTube the documentary called Secret of Oz, History of Money, The Banksters, how most wars are actually damn near all of them are very correlated to specific policy changes in monetary policy and control, and everything else is kind of secondary. And I think the banksters have a very big hand involved, and we've been talking about countries and whatnot, but I think the banksters are a very key aspect that is being overlooked, that isn't even tied back to them by any means.
Kirk, I have something for you.
What's that?
Is this the flying bankster you were talking about before?
Oh, it's a lone wolf.
Lone wolf strategy.
Hey, the wolves are coming back. There's an article in the newspaper. are we kind of wrapping up on Syria? I had a few other things I wanted to bring up, just small.
So what do you guys think will happen? What do you think's the end game there?
Wow, that's a tough question.
Yeah.
Well, I think Syrian government is going to dissolve. I think it's going to turn into more of a religious nation. The extremists are going to take over, and that's what's kind of been It's like the policy has changed, like I said before, about you have a country wrapped up in political discourse, the dividing factors. Right now, they're utilizing these extremists that are putting somewhat of a Sharia law type stuff involved, and it's affecting the, since there's already the Shiite and Sunni tribes mentality over in the Middle East, that they're, I think the policy has changed, becoming more involved in those two aspects than as a more democratized culture type. I don't know, does that make sense at all, where it's becoming more of a,
well, I think
away
you,
from
what
a secular
see,
government to a more of a religious-based government that
right.
makes it more of a religious fight and to divide the country versus more of a democratized, they weren't getting what they needed done, obviously, through that. So things
I think
have
the
to
reason
change.
That's happening, Kirk, is because of the emotional response of the people who've seen so many people killed around them. They're looking for something to grab onto, and I think that's a perfectly viable for, as Lydia was saying before, an uneducated people to grasp onto to organize and try to stop the killing that's been going on. I mean, I think
well,
you're
what
right.
does uneducated mean? I mean, you think they're just not versed in what law? Or I mean, they still have their lives, their beliefs, their pursuit
I'm speaking,
of happiness.
I'm speaking specifically from what I think her intent was, and now I'm paraphrasing what she was paraphrasing from somebody else, but it sounds like they're essentially, they haven't had formal education like what we have. So they don't have the knowledge of history that we do. They don't have the knowledge of, that's the perspective that I thought she was providing.
But that's from a worldwide perspective. All they know then is their area. And so if it's that tribe mentality, it's very easy for them to want to go and, I mean, to prod them is what I was saying earlier. That's why I was saying
they're
being
them into
and prodded into this civil war.
Right.
And
I think that's
so
what
as things
uneducated.
Escalate.
Right. And
but being uneducated is very.
No, it's like, I think what she meant was just having one side of influence and, you know, never really got exposure of, like, you know, what else has happened. So that's why
more
these
of a liberal arts education than in a way, but I people are generally pretty smart, even though they might be uneducated. They still are smart in what their day to day culture is, and that's what make them even smarter for their own right. personal happiness area. And so, it's even. It doesn't make them easier. I don't know. It makes them easier to prod, I guess, is what I would assume. But I don't think it takes away from the fact that they're what is really the matter at hand. And I think throwing things out like uneducated just puts negative connotation in the perception of what's the people at hand. And
I think it's easy to say uneducated in a term of.
You guys are just playing with words right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and that, right. I think that's just what her classmate from Syria said. She was just basically reiterating what he said.
Yeah, and that's so, maybe, yeah, he was just saying that, yeah, they're easily manipulated into this battle.
Yeah.
Or whatnot. And then other money coming in. I mean, this outside influence is probably bringing money, weapons, you know. All of a sudden, they didn't have weapons, and they have these enemies, but they all got along just because it's a trade culture, you know, or this tribe culture that self-sustaining. And then all of a sudden, one side gets weapons. You can easily go in and overtake your enemies that, you know, since it's tribe mentality, and if they've been there centuries or decades, you have these wounds, let's say, mental wounds, where, all right, let's go do some retribution here. And it's purely antagonist by America,
so,
in my opinion. But
so, Danny, what do you think the end game will end up being?
I don't know. The details I'm not going to worry about too much. In the end, you know, we don't really have much control of it. I'm not going to worry about it. But I think what's going to happen is, you know, those who want to be rich, who has a financial interest in it, I think they're going to they're going to win, and they'll let the politicians just play whatever politics to kind of get whatever their interests, aligned, and keep on making more money and keep on getting control and things like that. Whether it's done through Syria or another country, it doesn't really matter. I think in the end, if none of us are standing up to this, I think we're the losers. That's just what I think.
Yeah, I see it as we're a liberty organization. We want to be liberty activists, and it's a lose-lose for liberty either way it goes right now, it seems, and it's forced upon them. There's not much you can do, and it's only by Americans thinking more liberty-minded and isolationists in a way, focus on liberty at home, I think that would weaken our tentacles throughout the world that is creating this havoc and eroding liberty in Syria and in America at the same time. So it should be easy for us to be against this.
What do you think, Matt?
But isn't.
Well, as a kind of a wrapping up of the entire situation over there, I honestly don't know. I would like to say that I think things are going to turn out well, but I don't think they are. I think we're going to see a continuation down exactly what we've been talking about. I mean, the clip that we listened to is 2 years old, and we've come no closer to a resolution. And I think it's going to be par for the course over time. Regardless of how much effort we put in trying to educate people, I think we're going to be seeing this happen for foreseeable future.
Maybe we should just, if things expedite this thing, have America just cheer war and let's go take over the entire area and prop it up and boom, right? War yeah. will be over quicker.
51st state.
yeah, but there are several strong sides and within the battle, so it's not that easy to do.
Oh, and it shows one world government is very far away.
No, unless it was our vested interests, and there are powerful interests that are fighting amongst each other to maintain control of resources and geopolitical dynamics and that type of thing. Yeah, I kind of agree with Danny. I think ultimately, a lot of what you hear in the news is political theater, and the strongest business interests will win, and they'll route it through whatever country they can, and the casualties or results of war will just be what they are, and probably I have no idea what'll end up happening in Syria. Probably based on what we've seen, there's a good clip by what was a guy. He ran for president in 2004. He was an army general in Europe, but he kind of outlined where you'd see, kind of a similar script play out between Libya, Egypt, Syria, Iraq, where, the leaders would just be replaced and corporate interests served. But Syria is a little, it seems to be different. It's like dragging on where there are vested interests that are really battling it out in a proxy war. Who knows how that'll...
Do you remember what party that was?
He was a Democrat.
John Kerry?
No, it wasn't Kerry. He was a general. Let me see if I can find it. It's actually a really interesting clip.
So this is in the primary. He was running against Kerry.
Clark. See if this is on here. Here we go. This is 2 minutes. This is interesting. I'll put this clip.
Sure. Sounds good.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, No. He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq. Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, No. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
There you go.
I've been waiting to hear that clip for so long.
Had there been no oil there, it would be like Africa. Nobody is threatening to intervene in Africa. The problem is the opposite. We keep asking for people to intervene and stop it. And there's no question that the presence of petroleum throughout the region has sparked great power involvement. Whether that was the specific motivation for the coup or not, I can't tell you, but there was definitely, there's always been this attitude that somehow we could intervene and use force in the region.
Okay, that's it.
It kind of sounds like George Bush. Who is that?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought it was at first.
Yeah, for quite a while, the top U.S. general in the European theater.
Well, what was his name?
Wesley Clark. He ran
Wesley Clark.
Democratic.
Was that on a talk show? Was that interview on a talk show? I think I remember seeing that.
That sounded like a political campaign talk.
No, I think it was on a talk show. See here. Let me play it again real quick.
Okay.
10 days after 9/11, I went.
No, this is on Democracy Now.
Okay.
Anyways, yeah, I've heard that so many times from reputable people, and I've never seen the information, and I've had to just go with it. But yeah, where that it was handed down that yeah, we are going to war with 7 nations around the Middle East there, and it's obvious that it's been going on ever since, and this war on terror is the biggest excuse to make it happen.
Ugh, it's disgusting.
I recall seeing this video, and like on a later video, he was talking about the same thing, but he supported the war. All right.
Support the war in 2004?
Well, this was in 2004. No, actually it wasn't. Yeah. This was in 2011. It was right after 9/11.
You mean 2001?
That was 2001. 2001, you mean?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, that's what he was talking about, that those packets were brought down, that this is who we're all going to war with.
Yeah.
That it had nothing to do with terrorism or what. This is a plan. We're going to war with these countries. We don't know why it's going to happen yet, but the public will be around at that time. And so that's what the State Department does, the propaganda, PR, whatnot. It's thrown down our throats. And yes, and how close were we to going to war with Syria? Only American citizens rose up, sent letters to Congress, like Lydia was saying. It was like 100-1, and it was stopped.
Yeah, I think we're unfortunately, in a very bad time of history when it comes to, you know, I kind of wonder
if it's been this way the entire history of nations where people are told one thing and obviously the motivation is completely different. And when you're faced with real evidence, it's impossible to just sit there and say, well, no, there's no truth behind this. Obviously, this is conspiracy theory stuff and you don't want to see any truth in it. And then you look at it and you look at it objectively and you realize that there's really no other explanation. And, propaganda has been one thing, but this is like out and out just lying about motivation.
Let's look at, that's why I say we keep going back to the birth of America. We threw out the kings, the dictator, tyrannical form of government, and formed a republic. And it wasn't perfect by any means, but it was the best thing at the time America was such a weak state that they had to, the public outrage, if it was such a tyrannical government formed in America, it would have gotten overthrown right away from its citizens at hand and from other Europe through England or France or Spain or whatnot. But so America's founding weakened tyrannies all over the world just by our founding and how we formed our own government. We were very successful. And so that was the change, that was the shape shifting of the way governments form, and it was all based in the pursuit of happiness and liberty for the most part. And other countries had to follow suit somewhat. They had to change it, propagate their own little government, twist it around for them to keep control still, but pretend to give their citizens more and more control. But over time, America got taken over by the Bank of England, and it has changed the landscape of America ever since. So the Federal Reserve was, I believe, the seventh federal bank, or not federal, but private-held bank that America lets fund the money that we borrow money from. And ever since then, it's been a downward spiral, and we've taken over and that's what made America into the biggest imperialist country around. And we're strong. We share profits, tactics with Europe, and because that's where the banksters are from. And it's been a downward spiral every time. And when the similarities of the civil war going on in Syria, and I can't say it enough, you got to watch The Secret of Oz documentary on YouTube. And you'll hear about stuff that you never heard about of our own civil war, how it was funded through the banksters in England. And all of a sudden, the English army was on our north. The French army was in Mexico, ready to pounce on America to divvy up the spoils of a weakened America. And it was all set upon by the banking system. And Lincoln was put in a no-win situation where war was inevitable, just like the government in Syria is right now. They're put in a no-win situation. They have to go to war. They're forced into war. And then our own State Department sits there and criticizes them for being defensive and even makes up shit about them putting chemical weapons on their own citizens. It's a daunting thing.
All right.
But, it's a daunting aspect that we all have to live through today. And that
I think it's worth saying we're at about an hour and a half here, guys.
Yeah. So, Kirk, you said you had a couple of things, or why don't we give ourselves a few more minutes and wrap up?
All right, let's have a little lighter note for one.
Okay.
Anyone watch House of Cards?
Yeah. Oh,
I freaking love that show.
Seven on two, episode seven and season.
Oh,
my and season God. Two, you're already up to episode seven.
Yeah.
Oh my
I've
God!
I've watched episode one through one five yet. Twice.
I haven't watched it. I haven't watched one yet. I'm.
You haven't, so I can't be a spoiler. But
no, don't please don't. I've been watching Game of Thrones.
After the first one, it was almost like, oh my God, I should just quit watching this show. It's amazing. But what I did bring this up for is how funny it is. So after watching the beginning of the second season, I'm like, I got to know who is behind House of Cards because you will never see anything like this on any other channel.
Yeah.
You know how they're doing it, right?
And, well, I know it's a spinoff from a miniseries in England.
Yeah. No, but like how they come up with what they do for their formulas, Netflix, when they're doing that. They
changed it. Netflix, most companies, they want to see a pilot, and they then agree on a pilot. Netflix outbid this program for the rights of to produce it, and they instantly signed a contract for the entire season, and then instantly signed the contract for the second season. So they got to start right away, knowing that.
Well, they're up through season three now, so they've got them all.
I don't think they produced season three yet, right, but they've already said they're going to do season three. Yes,
but that's the difference.
Is that they go ahead and say they crunch the numbers, say this will work. Boom, do it the whole season instead of doing the pilot, and then everything changes from there.
So the way they do that, Kirk, is they've got the world's largest database on what people enjoy watching. They have all the information necessary. They break it down to, like, the lead actor has brown hair and blue eyes, and they get it that specific, and then they take a look at all the data that they have, and they say, this is what people are going to want to watch, and they figure it out. House of Cards is the perfect formula for them, so that's why they're producing it. Well,
that's not their only one they produce, so that would go into every other show they produce. So that,
right. And it, all of them as a whole. Like when
they do, or, Black and Arrested Development.
All of those have been produced because of the data that they've gotten showing that they're going to be successful. They know away.
But the writing behind this series,
House of Cards, is House amazing.
Unlike anything you'll ever see, in my opinion, so towards awesome. The politics of what happens. And that's why, so when I looked into it, the writer who changed it who created it is considered the creator of it he was given the rights to change it from a parliamentary government into the Republic government of America. And that was Bo Willimon or something like that. I'm just trying to remember his name. But anyways, I found it really interesting. I tried, I was looking up the guy and couldn't find much. And I found it always surprisingly that this show is highlighting a Democrat, corrupt Democrat, which is usually out of the norm from Hollywood. And that's what it was so surprising to me. But then when I looked into Bo Willimon, he started his political career by volunteer for Chuck Schumer, and that led him to be hired by Howard Dean and Hillary Clinton.
The name is Bo Willimon.
EAU space WILLIMON.
Yeah. Willimon.
So it's close, but yeah, so it was pretty funny, especially that he worked with Hillary Clinton.
So he has some inside baseball knowledge.
Because what, yeah, exactly. And for how this is, I mean, it's just like, God, this is like watching a miniseries about Hillary Clinton.
Or,
in my opinion,
any other politician, right?
Over most others, I would say, yes. But yeah, it was pretty fascinating. I kind of like that little tidbit, but
that is interesting.
It is a great show, though. It's a fantastic show.
Well, he had jobs with Hillary Clinton, Bill Bradley, and Howard Dean.
Yeah, he started with Chuck Schumer, though. Yeah. But yeah, because he was a volunteer, and then he was paid staff, I think, for the other three. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's a good episode. I mean, I've only made it through halfway, but
the first episode?
No, like first four or five episodes so far. So
do you think that essentially House of Cards is an allegory? So it's fiction that represents what's really going on?
I don't know. Well, the reviews that I read about it, like, it was funny. I could only see the review of the very first episode, and then it kind of I couldn't find any, or at least what I was looking under. It's like they just stopped doing it. And it was, And while I was looking into it, because I couldn't remember the whole first season, that, you know, when I was watching it, it just jumped straight from the first into the second season. And it's like, wow, I wish I could remember everything that happened a year ago, since I watched it all right away a year ago. But what were you saying?
Watch the last episode of the first season. So it will... It
kind of wraps up everything.
Well, it will give you a refresher at the beginning of the episode and then wrap up the season. So you don't have to watch the whole season.
Well, I'd tell that to Matt and Danny there, since if you guys haven't watched it yet.
I just finished watching it, so it's fresh in my mind.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you were bringing that up a month ago.
Yeah, yeah, I just started watching it. I hadn't been interested in it. And then I can't remember who was really insisting I should watch it, and then I started watching it. Now it's been – the hard part is I'm watching it with my roommate, so I have to wait until our schedules kind of align, and then we can watch it. But the instead of watching the new season, we've been watching the third season of Game of Thrones. Yeah, so we've been catching up on that. And then when that's done, we have intention of watching House of Cards. So yeah. The problem is I know when I start watching House of Cards, I'm just going to keep watching it. I won't stop. So I want to finish this other season first so that I can move on to this one.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about House of Cards, but I like it, but there's just such a disturbing factor about it. But
it's dark.
Yeah, it's so dark and based on such a popular figurehead, and it's...
It is that dark, though. I mean,
it's just crazy. So if I just take it as a novel type fiction, you know, it's a great series, but being so political... It you know, it hits home to the darkness of it, and I just hope it's not real.
Keep hoping.
Yeah, keep hoping.
And because so much of it is so right on of how the happenings are of a lot of things and how closely the Democrats and Republicans really do work together and whatnot. But it's very interesting.
All right, gentlemen. Well, I think we should probably draw.
Well, there was
one
other thing, unless you guys want to be done, but I'm fine being done. But it was something quick, just to think about for the future. Where did the monetary policy discussion go?
We can have one. We'll have one.
It's back when Ron Paul was running. Monetary policy was everything. You know, economy was going to crash, and it's kind of. Because the stock market's been going up, it's all been whitewashed. And I was going to say, based on like last week's show, how we were talking about what's the point of Snowden's outing and this and that, it's been kind of how I was saying, it's been kind of a controlled outing of the leak of how the government's spying. And it wasn't really a leak, that most of this information was already out there. But what I was kind of thinking is, you know, if this is a, you know, controlled outing to cover up other information. For one, I think has a lot to do with the war on terror. It kind of propagates the war on terror, trying to say, you know, there's terrorists we got to watch, you know, so we got, this is kind of why we're active, but it's also very distracting to the war on terror. So, you know, all this stuff, Syria and Afghan and stuff, everything, you know, kind of blowing up in our faces over there right now. That it's kind of a diversion factor, focused on the Snowden one aspect. But, and then the other thing is, when it happened, I think monetary policy was kind of growing with steam, and it's really fizzled out. And I think that this kind of, since libertarians were very focused on monetary, all of a sudden this NSA data came out, and it's a lot of information to gather and research and propagate. So it's... I think that was kind of to throw us all off the monetary policy with how it was QE is still going on. And, you know, we did talk about this in the first episode, but it's that was just kind of my process, and wanted to know if you guys thought anything of the same, or if, you know, and just kind of the work in progress of that kind of ties in everything we've been talking about and to continue on, and something to think about between now and next show. But
yeah, let's do it over the next couple of shows, just, you know.
Well, I'm not saying just for us specifically to talk monetary policy, but I'm just as the cultural atmosphere of America, that monetary policy just kind of has withered and died.
I think we should talk about that, and I do think that'd be a great topic for one of our next shows.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, can I say you guys should all do homework and watch Secret of Oz? It's 2 hours long, and it's well worth it. Trust me, you get through the first 5 minutes, you won't be able to peel yourself away. So,
all right. Well, I've got it pulled up already on YouTube here. I'll probably watch it after we're done here. But
you got to watch it. Well worth watching.
Yeah, I'm working over the weekend, so I'll probably do that during the week or something.
Well, hey, you're not working tomorrow, or no, you are.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, all I have right. a project deadline tomorrow, so you have to work all day today, so and all day tomorrow.
Well, Eric, Kirk, Danny, thank you so much for joining tonight. This has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 3. We will come back to you next week with another quality show. Thank you.